Hey, look, we've all been there. Stress from work, restless nights, your mind racing when you're trying to wind down. What if I told you there's a natural way to feel calmer and to sleep better? That's where CBDFX comes in. And let me tell you, they've got this figured out. They've got something for everyone, from sleep gummies to CBD capsules and topicals. Take their CBD and CBD night capsules, for example. These are designed to help you fall asleep quickly and stay asleep throughout the night. They contain CBN, what they call the ultimate relaxation cannabinoid, plus other natural sleep aids. And their original mixed berry CBD gummies have actually won 4 Healthline Best CBD Gummy Awards. They provide gentle, calming effects that boost your overall well-being with a delicious natural berry flavor. CBDFX has been around since 2014, so they know what they're doing. Everything's made right here in the USA with organic hemp. No GMOs, no pesticides, no harmful chemicals, plus third-party lab reports back everything up. Whether you want calm, focus, better sleep, or just an overall wellness boost, CBDFX has something for you. And right now, my listeners can get 40% off your first order with code ZABE at CBDFX.com. Use promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo, to get 40% off today. Feel the difference with CBDFX.
You know football, and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie.
God f***ing damn it!
What? That's good, right?
No. I only bet 10.
But you won.
What did I say? What did I tell you? It's a short thing.
You talk about this crap like it's science, Tony.
I lost a lot of f***ing money.
You didn't lose.
We could have turned your bullshit into a f***ing $1 million.
My bullshit?
You ever think I might know what I'm doing?
I'll just call myself Mr. X. Yep, you can't go wrong with Mr. X.
That's right, it's time for Mr. X. That time of the week here on the ZabeCast, turning your bullshit, hopefully someday, into $1 million, Mr. X.
That's one of my favorite clips. I love that one.
Did you ever think I might know what the hell I'm doing? That's incredible right there. When Tony was spiraling in that series and chasing it, in fact, that was one of the episode titles. If you ever read the notes for each episode, one was called Chasing It. And he was desperate. I mean, just a total degenerate. Mm-hmm. We're not like that. You're not like that. Mr. X joins us now for a little bit of everything, including, of course, a look back at the gambling stories from last weekend in college and pro, look ahead to this weekend, as well as a triumphant return of What Are You Doing? We forgot last week, and by we, I mean me. I'm using the Matt LaFleur we, which is whenever he fucks up with clock or game management, he says, Mr. X, we've got to do better. And I'm like, we? Oh, that is interesting.
Well, don't tell them it's your fault or they might believe you.
Right, exactly. So anyway, how you been?
Good.
All right, how was last weekend for you and your subscribers, and how was the public against the number in the National Football League?
Yeah, that was another good week for me in NFL. I hate to say that in hindsight, but I was 3-1.
Don't hate to say it. When you're right and you're rolling, you got to say it from the mountaintops.
But nobody wants to hear what you did when
It may be a little bit shady, but I'm telling you, I get Mr. X's newsletter. So I am verifying along the way. I'm keeping an eye on it. I might even be betting on some of these plays as well. And so, yeah, you did have another good week. What did you give out to your subscribers last week?
Well, yeah, and I'm NFL, I'm 13-4 on the year.
Yeah.
Now we're into October, so don't jump on the bandwagon now. Just stay where you are.
You'll flip it. Don't jump on now. It's too hot. Rolling too well. Yeah. Are you one of these people when you play craps that gets mad at somebody who enters mid-roll?
I don't get mad. I don't like it.
You don't love
unless,
it.
Unless they're really good looking. Then it's okay. We'll make room right here. But no. Yeah, if it's a big crowded table, you don't really have a choice. But if it's not huge and crowded, yeah, wait your turn. But I never get mad. But I might prefer to go to a different table if I don't feel the vibes. But yeah. Also good in college, man. 5-2. So after a bad college start, it's been a couple of good weeks in a row. So yeah, like I said, September, I always tell you, is going to be the worst month, and it's always the best month. I don't know why.
All right. Favorites went 9-7 in the NFL. That is, I believe, the fourth week in a row.
Fourth straight week in a row. That's okay. Wild.
Well,
doesn't matter, but it's unusual.
Right. Dog winners outright included Pittsburgh, the Giants, Jacksonville, Chicago, Kansas City, who was on sale this week, and I cannot believe people didn't jump on that because the Ravens were banged up. And the covers happened to be the Saints and the Cowboys, who seemingly would have been the easiest marks to get blown out. But welcome to the Kaleidoscope League. Welcome to the week-to-week league. Welcome to the, if it was that easy, none of us would work for a living. We just bet the NFL.
Yeah, in fact, that's a good one. That leads to a quick story and lesson. You know, X4, who's the most recent college grad doing his first big boy job and living at home, my home, by himself because we're in Maine.
Right.
And getting his feet wet. And he's got a good analytic head, and he's a learner. He actually, like, we have a whole chalkboard of the Rover and Over theory in the playroom.
Do you really?
Oh, God, yes. One time when he was on break in college, we were like, it was like the math guy proving the theorem, and the whole board was there, and we've just never had the heart to erase
it. I must see that. Tell him to take a picture, text it to you. There.
Good call.
And then I'd love to share that on social media. That is hilarious. Oh. So the chalkboard with the Rover and Over on it.
It was 3 a.m. one night when he's home on break from college. We were getting into, I was explaining why it works, and he's an analytic and data guy, so he loved it. But anyway, this week, and he's starting to dabble. He's the NBA guru, and he doesn't miss his NBA totals for this season. In 2 years, I've done those, and it's ridiculous.
Wow, okay.
But he, as X2 will say, he knows more, X4 knows more about the NBA than anyone I know knows about any subject.
Really?
Yeah, he's good.
Okay.
He knows the G League. But anyway.
But the lesson for X4 on football this week is?
He's starting to dabble a little bit, and, he doesn't have any money. He's playing a little bit, and he's starting to read my site. Well, he calls me up Sunday. Now, this week, I'm on the 0-3 teams. I'm on the shit teams. I'm on the Saints and the Giants playing 3-0 teams. It's really hard to take the Saints playing Buffalo. Yeah. It's really hard to take the Giants playing the Chargers. And he says to me on Sunday night, he's like, Dad, I read your stuff this morning. The first couple made sense. Then I get to the shit teams, and I'm like, what the hell is my dad doing? What is he doing betting the Saints and the Giants? He goes, but I did it because I felt like you know more than me. Yeah, no shit. But anyway, and he was just so ecstatic when they won. And the point is what I told him is I said, look, young novice gamblers bet the best teams. That's not how you do this.
Right.
Everybody, the Joe Q Public says, well, what are the Bills laying this week? I mean, they just bet the best teams. I'm not saying they're not going to hit their share. And I'm certainly I always say when you bet the 0-3 Saints like this week and you win it, but when you lose by 50. You just gotta throw that out. But anyway, so the point is, I'm not saying go bet the shit teams every week, but you do look for the flat spots, and you see the Chargers with 3 division wins in a row heading to the East Coast playing the 0-3 Giants. It has letdown written all over it. You have to kind of look for your spots to bet the crap teams because they ain't going 0-16 against the spread. Sorry, 0-17. I'm an old guy. So anyway, my lesson to him was don't bet the best teams. If you do, you're just a sucker.
Yeah, And I think your point about whether it loses by a point or you get blown out, it's just a loss.
Yeah.
The process or the system of this is good value to wager on is agnostic to what actually happens. So don't value outcomes over process. It's like in blackjack. Exactly. Blackjack has a defined set of standard play as to you're holding this, dealer's holding that. The play is to do X. A lot of times it doesn't feel right, but it's a process play that is based on you're not playing one hand of blackjack. You're going to be there for an hour or 2 hours maybe and longer, and this is the statistically correct play. So you then make the play you don't like to take a card, and it hits and busts you way over. You get a 10 on a 16, so you got 26, which isn't even close to 21. Guess what? Doesn't matter. The 26 is the same as the 22. It's a loss, so let it go.
Well, let me tell you that. That's an interesting one because, you know, people, when you teach them how to play, they think, oh, that means I'm going to win, whether it's football or blackjack. So when I'm sitting at the table with, let's say, somebody who I've helped and taught, you know the drill. The dealer has a 10, and your friend's sitting there with a 16. So she looks at you and says, what do I do? Okay. You know what I always say? First thing I say is, well, you're going to lose this hand. But you will lose it. You will lose
you
it.
Tell
less.
Them that right I away.
Say, yeah, well, it's like, don't tell me. I can't tell you how to win. You're going to lose
you're
this hand.
You're going to lose this but, hand. How do you want to lose it?
Well, I say, you're going to lose this hand, but you will lose it less often if you hit this.
Ah, got it.
Because
yeah.
It's not like hit it, you're going to win, but you'll lose less often if you hit this 16.
Right.
And that's kind of what you're getting
at. No, that's a good way to put it. That's funny. You'll lose. Oh, you're going to lose this hand, but you'll lose it less often. Doing it this way.
I can't help you 16, but I can tell you you'll lose a little less if you hit this.
All right, so that brings me then to my first what are you doing? And this goes out to Matt LaFleur because it just kills me watching him coach and miss coach on the sideline.
What are you doing?
It's 7-0. They've been going through the Cowboys defense, which is last in the league. They got the 32nd ranked defense. But the number one ranked offense through 4 weeks, and I'm wondering, has any team ever finished at the end of 16 or 17 weeks with that split, being 1-32 on the other side of the ball? Probably hasn't, would be my guess, right?
Don't you have a friend named Gronk that's going to help you with that?
I could ask Gronk about that. That said, so you've just gone through the Cowboys defense like shit through a tin horn. You've got a 4th-and-2 on the plus side of the field, like the 44, I want to say. And he punts. And he said afterwards, yeah, no, I really never considered going for it there. And defenders of LaFleur, who are becoming fewer and further between in terms of strategy, said, well, you know, they punted, and then they forced him to punt themselves, and they scored a touchdown after that. So it worked out. And people are like, no. That's an outcome. You're just looking at the outcome. It doesn't mean the process is right. 4th-and-2. If you're following this league at all, 4th-and-2 on the plus side of the field is nobody punts anymore, especially not up 7-0 early in a game. It's not like you would lose the game if you didn't get that 4th-and-2. It was the most chicken shit decision. And what's ironic is that his first year as coach, he was the most gophered on 4th down guy by the numbers in the league. He was also a guy that said, all gas, no fucking break. And he's
what
turned into
that?
The, I don't know. What are you
I
doing?
I can tell you what changed that.
What are you doing? What changed it?
The Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady game when the analytics told him to kick the field goal with 2 minutes to go down 8.
Oh, that still burns my ass.
So from that point on, he's kind of like, yeah, I'm not following those guys.
He also said he went against his gut on the end of the first half where he was aggressive and tried to throw with 26 seconds left from his own 15. And Love got strip sacked and the Cowboys took one play and threw a touchdown to totally swing the momentum of the game. I'm like, why are you going? Why are you admitting that you're going against your first instincts on this? Jesus, have a plan. And then what was even more crazy, I'm going to play this bite for you. You talked about how he thought that the team knew they were in their 2-minute offense, which is the fastest they can go. Instead, they were only in their no-huddle offense, which is faster tempo, but not the fastest here.
We're not telling Jordan to throw the ball away if it's not there, and he throws the check down, and that puts you in that situation. Once that has happened, what are the guys supposed to do? Because from the outside looking in, it didn't look like there was the urgency that was required.
Which, that the urgency that was required didn't happen previous to that as well, which gets into the process of we ran a play out of the 2 minute and then we huddled up and we called a play. We thought they were going to be in cover two. They played man coverage. We hit Rome on a slant. And at that point is when, in my mind, it's 2 minute. We operated out of a different 2 minute formation. So I would say this, where we have to clear up the communication is when we're not in 2 minute mode and then you jump into 2 minute mode, everybody on the field has to know that.
Yeah, yeah, that's your job. You can't just sit there and say, in my mind, we were in 2 minute. Nobody can read your mind. How now, is there not a simple hand signal, two fingers, a fist? This is driving me crazy.
Now, was that in the overtime 2 minutes? Is that what he's referring
yes.
to?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that was horrendous. That was going to be my...
What are you doing?
Right. In this sense.
Thank
and
you.
Sometimes people...
What are you doing? Oh, sorry, that was really loud. I apologize for that. That's very loud.
I'm not using hindsight, but I honestly felt on that last drive and said that they were playing college overtime rules, and they forgot there was a clock. Like, oh, it's our turn now to score. And it was like they had four cracks from around the 10, and they ate up all the clock, and they were, I'm sure you guys dissected this. I live did not think that incompletion on third down, I thought it ended the game. And they gave him a second, I think out of pity.
Well, Michael Irvin was screaming going, clock operator, you've got to be slow with the finger.
Yeah, you expect that at home, it usually is. But they were so lucky. I mean, that ball bounces just a smidge different.
If it pops in the air, if it pops in the air off the back of the Cowboy defender, it gets an extra second of airtime because the clock doesn't stop till it hits the ground.
Exactly.
Now, or as Mike Tirico accurately pointed out, because he knows all the rules better than any play-by-play guy in the league, he said if it goes through the end zone, the clock doesn't stop till it hits something. So if it travels all the way to the back wall, the clock does not stop until it hits the wall. Now, I do believe that's a reviewable thing, so I don't think I think so. I think if there was a slow clock operator, they would not let that stand. But the bigger point is this. It's first and 10 at the plus 41, and they run out of time with 2 minutes and a timeout in their pocket.
They took the timeout home.
How do you run out of time 2 minutes at the plus 41 with a chance to win in overtime and a timeout.
Crazy.
Criminal clock mismanagement.
And here's the thing that I know sounds petty in hindsight, but I think of this live. It's not only that, but with that timeout, when they ran, I mean, I think they finished second down with like 28 seconds left, and they snap again with seven, running live. You've got to call that timeout at 28.
They were out of timeouts. But
I thought you just said they took one home.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean they took one home, but they took a down home with them.
I thought they took a timeout home because
they took the timeout. So they completed a pass that was tackled at 1:10.
Okay.
And didn't take a timeout. They ran one play between a minute 10 and 32 when they took their last timeout and only time, or the second and last. Do you get two timeouts in overtime? Where did they burn the other one is what I need to find out.
I thought they took one home. Sorry, I thought they did.
No, that's why the clock was running. They would have taken the timeout otherwise. But my point is this.
The screen was wrong because the screen showed them with one. Okay, that's what I remember.
My point is this. You wasted 40 seconds. You burned half of your time left in the game on one running play. From 1:10 left to 32 seconds left.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing that coaches so frustrate me with is that they over They panic. They want to have a timeout like a whoopee blanket, like a baby with the whoopee. They don't want to give up that timeout because, oh, what if we throw a play in the middle of the field and we get tackled and we run out of time and we can't call timeout? Oh, what if, you know, I need to call a timeout to set up a field goal? There are timeouts all around you. An incompletion is a timeout. Running out of bounds is a timeout. A penalty is a timeout. There's timeouts all over, picking up off the ground. You need the time because you get one DPI in the end zone, it's first and goal at the one. And you need three downs maybe to get it in. You need the time for the extra downs that may get delivered to you all the time when you get these PI calls late in the game. You cannot afford to burn it down to 15, 20 seconds. But that's what LaFleur did. And then he goes on with the, you know, we got to be better. And all I can think about is Walter White and Breaking Bad.
We? Who's we? There is no we.
There is no we. You're the coach. We.
And Jay, what I think about when that's live, and this is what I started to say sounds petty, but if you run that, you let that clock go down like they did, Love was in no hurry, and they took the last snap at 7. What I vision happening is one little flinch, false start, 10-second runoff, game's over. You
that's
can't
another,
run it down
right.
there. You can't. You have to snap that around 12 or 15. Right. First of all, you want to, but one tackle pulls off just a smidge early, you go home.
And Ron Torbert's crew threw a ton of flags. They're one of the most flag-happy crews in the league. That's another detail you've got to be aware of.
You go home. Right. You can't run it down. That was terrible.
It was bad. But don't worry. He said the reason he can't remember certain things because it was like a train. It was like a car crash happening in front of his face.
Jordan comes off after the incompletion that leaves the 1 second left, and you're not ranting and raving and yelling at him, but you clearly, you can see on the TV, you talk to him. So what's the message there?
I don't even know because it was like watching a slow motion car crash in front of your face.
Yes, one that you caused. One that you almost caused because you were texting while driving. I said, just to conclude and we'll move on. Good thing Matt LaFleur. There's two good things going for Matt LaFleur. You ready? One is he doesn't look like someone like Freddie Kitchens, who is the former Browns coach, the fat guy with the disheveled look to him and the beard, because LaFleur is trim and good looking, and there is always a bias in favor of those guys. And the second thing that he's got to be very thankful for is that the Packers don't have an actual owner who owns a $328 million yacht. Because those guys have egos that are massive, and they get really pissed off watching their coaches lose games, and they tend to kind of get a little bit trigger happy and sometimes fire those coaches. So LaFleur is lucky. If he was a fat coach on another team, he would be in real jeopardy right now. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah. You got any other what are you doings?
No. All you. What do you got for the what are you doings of the week?
I have one that I was going to do last week, and we forgot it. So I know it's stale.
That's
here.
Fine.
But I was watching, of course, after midnight, I'm watching the Colorado State game because it's the my three-team money line dog parlay.
Okay.
We hit. So I'm watching this. They stink. They can't move the ball. They have one of the worst offenses you've seen. They had like 10 possessions and 8 first downs. They're horrible. They're losing 10-3 in the fourth quarter. They pull their quarterback. They go to the backup. He takes them 75 for a tying touchdown. Okay, we're alive. They have a mistake play that goes 75 the other way. So now they're down 7, last 4 minutes. Next drive, guy takes him 70 yards for the tying touchdown.
Okay.
Now, we always argue the go for one, tie, go for two. We know the trade-offs. Generally speaking, you just went on with this new quarterback, 2 back-to-back long drives for 2 touchdowns. Who's got momentum here? Who wants more time to win? Who wants to play overtime? That team, right?
You would think.
But the other thing that's always forgotten is you miss kicks. So sometimes they don't factor that in. All right, they kick the extra point, tie, we're going to overtime, I'm feeling good. Oh, wait, there's a penalty. So it's the classic, oh, wait, instead of on the 3, we can put this on the 1.5.
Oh, right.
So they take the point off the board. And by the way, making the kick isn't automatic, so I'm glad you've already made it. And I'm like, oh, no, you're not going for this. No, you're not going for this. Sure enough, they're going to go for it. Now, I ask you this. If you're going to throw the ball, does 1.5 and 3 really matter? Does it really? Oh, thank God we only have to throw it one.
Right.
And
if you're calling a throw, if you're calling a pass,
yeah,
I would say that extra yard and a half is completely irrelevant. Like, we got a killer 1 yard route, but if we have to go 3 yards, it won't work. None of the math adds up.
It gets worse. So I'm like, oh, no, they're going for it. Okay, we could win this parlay here, but I don't think that's going to happen. So what did they do on the play after the time? They put the starting quarterback back in, who was ineffective for 3.5 quarters, had no yards. The backup leads him on 2 touchdown drives. But, oh, wait, we're going to go for 2, and we're going to reinsert him. Guess what? He rolled out, couldn't find anybody, threw it away, game over. What are you doing?
What are you doing?
This is the coach for Colorado State?
Yeah.
What's his name?
He puts in the backup. I have no idea.
What are you doing?
Don't worry, I'll look it up.
The guy just led two possessions, 2 70-plus yard drives to tie the game, take the point off the board, and put the backup in.
Jay Norvell.
Yeah.
That's old Jay Norvell right there, your coach of Colorado State, one of our What Are You Doing award winners from a week ago.
What are you doing?
Okay,
what do we got for this week? By the way, I did look this up. Ready? What is Gronk 3. What is the difference in success rate of 2-point conversions in the NFL from the 2-yard line versus the 1-yard line?
Probably not much. I don't know.
Since 2015, the 2-yard line has averaged between 47.5% to 55%.
Yeah.
Data on 2-point conversions from the 1-yard line is less comprehensive, says Gronk. Because these typically only occur after a defensive penalty on a touchdown or an extra point attempt that moves the ball closer. Mm-hmm. A specific example from the 2024 season indicates that teams converted 6 of 14 from the 1-yard line, which is 43%. So technically, if you just go by last year's sample, the 1-yard line success rate was less than the average 2-yard.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's kind of funny,
right?
All
I know is if I'm throwing the ball, it makes no difference.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Difference. Okay, who else on the are you doing front?
That's the only one I got. Okay. I had this, just LaFleur and that one, yeah.
Okay, very good.
You know football and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won. Make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit mybookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie.
Look, I know what you're thinking. Here's the bald guy talking about hair loss treatments. Well, the irony is not lost on me, folks. But here's the thing. Hims isn't just about hair restoration. They're tackling real health issues that some guys deal with but just don't want to talk about or wait in the doctor's waiting room. No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. They offer convenient access to prescription treatments with doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can stop hair loss and even regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatments, no waiting rooms, no hoops, no hidden fees. Think of Hims as your digital front door for trusted treatments. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Zabe. That's Hims.com/Zabe for your free online visit. Go to Hims.com/Zabe. That's Hims.com/Zabe. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. You know, one of the things I love most about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast. In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide.
If you are overwhelmed by the hiring process or you've been struggling to get your job post seen, listen up. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. Your post jumps right to the top of the page for relevant candidates, so you reach exactly who you want faster. And it makes a huge difference, according to Indeed data. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this podcast will get $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the podcast by saying you heard about it right here on this pod. Indeed.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
Next up on the docket. Right.
Well, I got a rules and history lesson for you. I'm kind of geeky about, you know, I always say when you create a new rule, you have to think like the cheater. You know, who's going to circumvent this? The Belichick rule. Who's going to find a way around it? And as you say, Zabe, up on my knee, going to tell you an old school history lesson.
Let's sit on Uncle X's lap, everybody. Let's hear this story.
Kids don't know this, but back in the day, the false start rule, you know, defenders could jump across the line and the offense could not flinch. If they flinched, it was on them. And the guy could, because the theory was you could jump off and then you could get back. And as long as you got back before the snap, you know, you were good. And the big defensive ends, Bruce Smith, Reggie White, third and long, they would do it on purpose. They'd take a hard step off the edge, just trying to make that tackle flinch. And he had to sit there like a statue while you're stepping right at him. And then they'd get back online and maybe they'd snap it and get the offside. But if so, it went from third and 15 to third and 10. They didn't care. It was worth the risk. Well, then they finally changed the rule. These guys grew up like statues. They didn't flinch, even when the defense jumped right at them. Okay, so then they changed the rule and they say, okay, if you make the guy flinch, it's offsides. But if they stay in their stance, go ahead and get back. Well, the first year they were playing that, the habits didn't change. The tackles would still stay in that stance because they grew up playing that way. And I've been watching that like, why don't you flinch? Because when you flinch, it's on the defense. Well, it took years, and now they have it down. The end jumps offside, and you see the guard move and point like, oh, shit, he made me move. You know, it's a fake, but it draws the flag. You see what I'm saying? The offense has now finally learned when they jump offside, move and act like you did it because of them. Okay, so it took years. Now we have this happening again. Okay, they had the grounding rule. What does it mean, grounding? It means throwing the ball into the ground. That's what it meant. Growing up, if you airmailed it, you threw it into the stands, you threw it high, hey, somebody could catch it, it's okay. But if you throw it into the ground, it's grounding. But what the NFL wants is precise rules where there's no judgment. So they come up with this, well, you know, if you go outside the box, you get into the line. So they make it so it's a definitive rule and there's no judgment hardly in grounding. So instead they throw it in the ground at some guy's feet, point at him and go, yeah, I was throwing it to him. It's bull. But anyway, they make it exact, real exact, because they want to be able to remove the judgment. So
they're trying to codify every specific action on the field. And you get down to the point where you cannot codify every little thing that happens. Well, and you tie yourself up in legalese and very thick rule book that is hard to interpret. Go ahead.
So here's the evolution. Now we have it's taking a while, just like the offsides where you had to fake the reaction. And they're starting to get it. For 2 years now, I've been watching this. Now they have the, oh, hold up the play because the offense subbed, so the defense gets to sub.
Yeah.
Okay. And they were running. And I'm sitting there thinking, when they do a late sub at 15 or 20 seconds, you got to trudge, especially going, I'm now going to, on defense, replace my nose tackle. Because how long does it take him to run off the field? And then they get a delay of game call or they use their timeout.
Don't run off the field. And what does the rule book say? They talked to one of the Pereiras or one of those guys last week. And what the rules say is you get a, quote, reasonable amount of time to sub on defense. What the hell is reasonable? You know what I would – and they're starting to learn. Wait, we don't really want to sub, but instead of – if you sub at 18, we're going to use up 15, 18 of your seconds by us subbing. So they're starting to learn to drag it out and force a timeout call. I would – every time they sub late, what's a reasonable amount of time for Vita Vea to get off the field? Like a week?
You know, like, I don't know.
So
I don't know.
They're starting to learn,
yeah.
And pretty soon they're going to have to change this because here we are defining all these rules, and they say, well, on this one we'll just call it a reasonable amount of time. These defenses have got to learn to sub as slow as you can, and they never call them for using an unreasonable time. Whatever you do, you know, don't sub a corner, sub a big fat defensive lineman, and you can eat up their play clock and draw either the timeout or the delay a game. Make sense?
It does. Now, I asked Gronk 3, I said, when did the NFL change the false start rule? It said 2006 was a major change in which strict enforcement on any abrupt movement simulating a snap applied to all offensive players, and what the league did was they told the refs to stop calling tiny flinches on wide receivers or running backs, okay. That it's really supposed to pertain to the O-line and the D-line. Now, I seem to recall, as you do, that
it was once, in the 90s.
Well, hold on. Once upon a time, so let's say a defensive player A jumps off sides prior to the snap. Offensive tackle B also moves prior to the snap. Those are offsetting penalties.
No, not back in the day, because you were the defensive end was entitled to jump off and get back.
Well, hold on. Got to get back, though. If you jump off sides, induce the tackle to also go early, and you're still offsides, that's offsetting. That used to be offsetting, if I recall.
No, not in my day.
I seem to recall only that you could jump offsides and get back. And if in the process of getting back, the O-lineman flinched, it's on the O-line. And it's on the offense.
It didn't used to be that way. They had to maintain that stance because he had time to get back, but once you flinch, that's a foul.
Well,
it was on the offense.
Okay, but currently, it doesn't matter if you get back on sides.
That's correct.
Once you have induced a false start is the way they call it, inducing a false start.
And they've learned to pretend it's induced. It took them a while, but now they've learned to move on purpose and say, oh, man, you induced me. But it used to be any flinch was a dead ball, a dead right then and on the offense, because it's like, oh, you flinched and he didn't get a chance to go back. Maybe that's farther back. I thought it was in the 90s.
Well, here you go. 2007, I did a second Gronk search. Point of emphasis. So not specifically a rule, but a point of emphasis. The NFL explicitly instructed referees to penalize defenses for simulating a cadence or using words to bait false starts amid rising complaints from guys like Peyton Manning and others. And they also said it's distinct from neutral zone infractions or offsides, which are 5-yard penalties, that the inciting, you know, triggering a false start is a specific penalty. So anyway,
I'm going to have to research this, but it was way back where you were not allowed to move at all. And it was very unfair for the offense to be a statue while the defense was jumping in their face. But,
knowing that if a guy gets a half a step on you, he's going to completely crush your quarterback, and you might be working in a box factory next week. For a lot less than it is to play in the NFL.
Yeah. All right. I've got two things that bug me more than anything watching the NFL. Number one, the most annoying statement that you hear repeatedly by analysts when they throw a pass to a running back, sometimes a tight end, usually a running back, and they say, oh, he got a mismatch there. He caught the running back on a linebacker. Who the hell is supposed to cover him? It's not some sneak where the quarterback caught a mismatch, a running back and a linebacker. You don't have 11 cornerbacks. Linebackers have to cover somebody. Guess who they cover?
Running backs.
Running backs and tight ends.
In the middle of the field.
He caught the tight end on a linebacker.
The only time,
no kidding.
The only time you'd have a corner covering a running back would be when they split the running back out as a wideout, which is an interesting wrinkle. Nice. They do it from time to time, but that's about it.
But you still have to have the dime defense. You run out of DBs. They can't cover.
I know. Yeah. You're right. I'm just saying the one exception is when they split a running back way out wide. And that in those cases, yes, you will have the rare instance. But yeah, that's a dumb expression. Yeah. All right.
They say
next.
It every time.
Next thing you hate.
The other one that bothers me the most is ESPN analytics say 4th and 3 or less, you go for it. Okay. I'm good with analytics. However, are you telling me they say this every time? Well, you know, 4th and 3, you're supposed to go for it. So does it matter if you have Josh Allen or Joe Flacco at quarterback? They have the same odds. Right. I don't buy that.
Yeah. No, you're right. There's got to be personnel, context.
Are?
Yeah. And the other thing is the analytics only account for the long run probability of success.
Yeah.
A single NFL game is an episodic event. It has a beginning and an end. And there's a winner and a loser, and winning is very important, and losing is sometimes catastrophic. So in an episodic, singular event, you don't have the benefit of, well, we were 0-for-5 on 4th down, but we'll make up for it when it's all said and done. Oh, yeah, in December, when you're 4-11, won't help you then, will it?
we're the Browns, and we have Flacco. I think we're punting. It's okay.
Right.
Which is why it
infuriates me that LaFleur won't go for a 4th and 2 on the plus side of the field when it's so early in the game. It's 7-0. You're leading. It's early in the game. It's such a low leverage spot. There's so much more game to make up.
Yeah.
Not getting the 4th and 2.
I will never buy the concept that analytics apply the same no matter who the personnel is. That's just wrong.
Right. Speaking of rules, Troy Aikman on Monday night on the Bronco game, which was a complete dud, took to Russell Yerk, who is the former NFL administrator of officials. This is zilch. ESPN's so cheap, they won't even pay anymore the actual former referees. Like, who was the guy they used to pay on ESPN? Not Cleet Blakeman, he's still doing it. Not Bill Vinovich, some other guy. They're paying a guy named Russell friggin' Yerk. And there was a ticky-tack blindside block that Troy Aikman said, you know what, I'm calling bullshit on this. Here's the bite.
Alex Palcheski, who they bring in as an extra offensive lineman. He's been busy tonight, guilty of that blindside block.
Yeah, here he is right here.
Forceful contact with the shoulder going back toward his own goal line. That's a blindside block. Good call.
Good call, nerd.
I'm not going to keep my mouth shut. That's a good call. It's just not a necessary call, you know? I was waiting for it. I had no opportunity to try to make a play.
First down and 25. Spinning catch by Dobbins. And Dobbins brought down by Dax Hill.
Nothing brings a broadcast to a screeching halt more than these yellow flags.
So there you go. Nothing brings a broadcast to a screeching halt quite like that. Mm-hmm. I don't like Troy Aikman. I think he says good job, great job, fine job, too much. But I applaud him for that going, bullshit.
Yeah.
Russell fucking Yerk. The guy I was thinking of was John Perry. John Perry was hired, but he left in 2024 to be an officiating liaison for an NFL team. So they replaced him with Russell Yerk. So there you go on that. By the way,
I got a question on the on the Sunday night game. Is it really necessary to show Jerry Jones every 90 seconds?
Well,
just
a big
dying to see him do something. He's just sitting there. He must know the cameras on. They just want to see him angry. They want to see. They show him more than Taylor.
They show him more than they need to. But remember, it's the Micah Parsons game. They were going to show him a lot.
There. It seems like they show him every game. Every time they make a mistake, it's like, oh, let's see Jerry's reaction.
Yeah. Hey, while we're on the rules of things, did you see the pitch clock violation that was overturned, thankfully, after consultation? Very tight spot, top of the 9th inning. Padres down 3-1 to the Cubs.
I did not. Yesterday they did that?
By the way, when I play these bites, can you hear them down the line?
I am today. Often I don't, but today I'm here.
Okay, good. Nick. All right, I want you to listen to this. This is the Cubs pitcher Keller.
Yeah,
against Bogarts. Xander Bogarts is in there. The pitch clock is winding down. I already think the pitch clock is too fast. I also think that the playoff pitch clock should be doubled. We don't need to rush through these playoff games. I'm in favor of there being some pitch clock, but you should loosen it up. Clock is ticking down, and at the last second, Keller steps off the mound when that should then either reset or allow the batter to step out as well, but here's what happened.
Screen, go Cubs, go at the top of their lungs here. And we got a mess on our hands right now as Keller stepped off. The pitch clock did not reset. And then Xander Bogarts just got called for an automatic strike. How can that happen?
Because the umps are morons. That's how it can happen.
Okay, now in the pitch clock, is it a violation at zero, or is it like the NFL? Well, when we get to zero, we're going to give you a little bit more.
That's a great question. I believe they're supposed to bake some leeway into it. Here's some more.
Mike Schilt's getting an explanation from Eric Backus. Remember, a pitcher can't step off with nobody on base unless a catcher comes out for a mound visit. You don't have a disengagement with nobody on base, so Bogarts was confused. And these six umpires will converge in front of the plate.
Did Keller step off? Okay, you see Keller left. Yeah, so he steps off. When he stepped off, Bogart stepped out.
Now, he stepped off, and it looked like he asked for a reset. But again, there is no pitch clock reset with nobody on base. So Eric Backus never grants him the reset. Looks like he said something to Bogarts right there to get back in.
The batter will be charged a timeout, not a strike. 0-0.
All right.
Okay, you gotta love this, Zabe.
Yeah.
Okay, I like the pitch clock, but you gotta love the 5-minute consultation on the rule that's designed to speed up the game.
Right, exactly. That five there. Well, it wasn't five. It was a minute 37 start to finish. But still, that ate up a lot of the time savings. And what's crazy is that the pitch clock, so Keller does step off. Somehow none of the umpires saw that. And that should entitle Bogarts a chance to step out. Keller steps off at 6 seconds left. Bogart steps out. The umpire then motions to Bogarts to get in with 3 seconds left. Keller begins his windup with 1 second left. He's got his knee raised and is about to deliver. He probably would have not got the pitch out of his hand by zeros, but I don't think they rule it that close. But by that time, with 3 seconds left, the umpire was already out of the box, signaling pitch clock strike applied to Bogarts. I mean, come on, people. This is a crucial wild card game. 3-1, top nine, two outs. We don't need to be doing this tight.
Has anybody ever, and now this isn't something I would have noticed, but has, you know, if you gave him a half an extra second, does the other coach complain?
No.
Hey, I think there was a violation there and you missed it by a half second. I don't think they're doing that. So just let it roll.
Yeah. Okay, what else do we got this week as we look ahead? The big college game this weekend is going to be Vanderbilt at Alabama, a place that Vanderbilt has not won at since 1984. 41 years of not winning at Alabama, and they got a real shot, I believe.
They do.
They got a real shot.
Yeah, that'll be a fun game, and I don't
What's
even
the
care.
Line in that game, by the way?
Oh, give me a second. And I gotta love the fact that we talked last week. Vanderbilt already hit the over.
Yeah, them's your boys right there.
And their number was 4.5. You gotta love that.
Right, 10.5 is the number. Alabama 10.5, and then North Carolina +14 against Clemson. Chapel Bill is back off of his bye week, in which he was seen jetting with Ms. Jordan Hudson to some nice swank vacation place.
Yeah. You know why he does that? Because he can.
Because he can. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the only other NFL note is it a silly amount of blocked field goals this year? Is it me?
No. Well,
aren't they getting blocked left and right? We all talk, the kickers don't miss anymore, but how come the blocks are so high?
I watched a video yesterday. I talked to Charch about it here on the pod. I'll send it to you. Basically, the NFL changed the rule on letting the equipment guys treat up and prep the K-balls to use in games for the entire week leading up to the game. They used to only get the K-balls an hour before kickoff, and they had to hurriedly get them prepped, shine them up, mud them up, buff them up, all that stuff. Now they've got it for a week, and the numbers on long field goals is off the charts this year. It's a huge jump up. And Vic Fangio for the Eagles said, you watch. Here's the bite here. He says the guy in Dallas, meaning Aubrey, he's going to pop a 70-yarder. Here's Vic Fangio.
These kicking balls that they changed this year have drastically changed the kicking game. Field goals in particular. So it's almost like they need an asterisk here, like it was the live ball error or the asterisk for those home runs Bonds and Sosa and McGuire were hitting. You know, the way they've changed the ball, the NFL, the kicking ball, has drastically changed the field goals.
Is the shape different?
No, the kicking balls, and you can ask Clay about it when he gets in here, but in years past, the officials would rub them down or other people would rub them down and you play with them. Now the balls are in-house all week, and they kick those balls that they've had, and nobody else touches them. I mean, the guy in Dallas is going to hit a 70-plus yarder this year. You can just book it.
There you go. You can just book it. It's wild to see, though, isn't it?
And I know this is real petty, but I was thinking similarly. The way they're kicking, he's like, if you watch the guys kick, somebody on the kickoff hit the upright. And my sooner or later, somebody's going to figure out that rule in the right situations, not just with 2 seconds left, the fair catch free kick rule, because these guys can hit a free kick, you know, where you get no rush and take as many steps as you want. They can hit these from 70, 75 yards. And I've always wondered, you know, they return it and three plays later, they kick a long, long field goal with a pass rush, somebody blocked. Just fair catch it and kick it through. They'll make it.
Yeah, I guess it's so easy now that maybe even you, Mr. X, could make a 60-yarder.
No, I'm only good from 50. You know that.
Okay, Thursday night.
I'd have to use the old ball.
Okay. Thursday night football, Rams -6.5 at home against the Niners. Total is 46.5. Line has moved all the way from 3.5 on Monday to 6.5. Why?
I don't know. I just saw that this morning. That smells to me of injury that I don't know.
Okay, I'm gonna take the Niners plus. Feisty Niners, division game.
If it's 6.5, that's an automatic buy it to +7 with the Niners.
Okay.
The Niners somehow need to change their whole medical staff. I mean, how many years in a row can you be the most injured team in the league? I don't know.
Well, it depends on the kind of injuries. If they're soft tissue, non-contact injuries, hamstrings, groins, et cetera, then you've got a point. If they're collision and car wreck injuries, like what Tyreek Hill got hit with, different story. By the way, Tyreek Hill's injury apparently went pretty well, and they believe he could be back in a year. If not, if it was more complicated, it might have been 2 years. Whoa.
Yeah, wow.
All right, so you're buying it up to 7 is what you're saying.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, yeah. Gronk 3 says, the betting line for the Niners and Rams has moved significantly. Open Rams 3.5, but has shifted to Rams 6.5. The movement seems driven by the Rams' recent win over the Colts and the Niners' upset loss to the Jaguars, plus injury concerns for Brock Purdy, toe, and their short and their short week road trip.
Well, let me tell you, Grok, the most recent events, wins and losses, don't have a damn thing to do with the Vegas line.
Does Grok know about the error of recency?
Clearly not. Clearly not.
All right, for more, go to callmemrx.com, your website. Follow him on Twitter at justcallmemrx. We will take the money and run. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya. Thanks.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know football, and you pick winners all the time. So why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won. Make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season exclusively at MyBookie.